thanks for downloading the audio podcast of this week's sermon. We pray you'll be blessed and encouraged with the words you hear.
If you could introduce yourself, give us your name, your age, and an interesting fact about yourself. And honesty on your age, it's church, okay?
So what, name, age,
interesting fact.
Oh, right, okay. So I'm Ian McVicar, as JT's already introduced me. I'm thinking coming 46, all right, next Monday. Man, I'm a massive Liverpool and Rangers fan, which explains the hairline.
Brilliant. We'll pray for you at the end. Couple quick fires, and these can play along a wee bit, just you know, so everyone's at home feels like we're at the sofa listening. Coke or Pepsi?
Matcha, Dr. Pepper, man. Sorry.
Interesting. So, it's not on the question, but here, sure, it's okay.
If I had to pick,
coffee or tea?
Definitely coffee.
Good job. If you had a superpower, like any superpower in the world, what would it be?
Invisibility.
Oh. I won't ask why. I'll just leave that up to
the imagination.
Yeah. What's something that people would be surprised to learn about you?
That's mean mug, isn't it? Just always that unapproachable. I'm actually quite dead on whenever you approach me. Like, it's so I'm not as scary as I look sometimes.
You're not as scary as you look. I like that. And lastly, if you had to wear an everyday smell as an aftershave, what would it be?
Paco Rabanne Black XS.
Say it again?
Paco Rabanne Black XS.
Okay. Paco Rabanne S.
Black XS.
There you go. Ladies, if you want to buy some Christmas presents, there you go. If you want to smell like Ian McVicar. Brilliant. Here, we're going to get into why we're here tonight. First question for us is this. Give us an insight into the early years of Ian. What was it like growing up? What like things happened in your early childhood. What happened in your early childhood that shaped you to be the guy you are today?
You're supposed to put me at ease up here, so you're...
I'm just trying to take all the blame, don't worry about
it. Right, obviously born to my mum and dad. Part of the first few months of my life, born and reared in Glebeside Estate. Still there to the day, although I'm in the posh end now, that's what we called it whenever we were younger and that. Born with a football at my feet, more or less, and boots and gloves in my hand. That was my two biggest passions growing up. Big, massive Mike Tyson fan, as I said, Liverpool and Rangers fan. Happy childhood, pretty decent. Played football nearly every day, but unfortunately had a real, real dark, sinister sort of streak to myself. And that's what I say, the people find out the night, like, things about me that they'd probably never heard before, even my mum and dad, even Mel and Nell, find out things that maybe they didn't know about me. But so as a kid, growing up, I had a dark voice in my head, really sinister, sort of like evil voice that sort of always pushed me. No, maybe in the very early years, but my first memory of it was I was in P1, and it was a fella, Stephen Castles. I was chasing my cousin Dean around the playground and that, and they were running around us. We were like sort of gathered here, and they were running around us, and Stephen was trying to hit my cousin Dean. And I was like, I'm going to take him out here. Do you know, sort of thing. So, but I was like, I'm going to let him build up a speed. Because then the quicker he goes, it's going to be worse damage to him. So once they were up at full speed, I just stuck the foot out and I went down, scooped his face up the thing. And that, and then whenever I knew it was like a sort of real sinister sort of side to myself, whenever I seen him in the classroom, so I sat and laughed at him because he had this big swollen face and that there. So, but again, it wasn't a really everyday sort of thing. It was one of them things that just sort of creeped in now and again. And then the older I got, it started creeping in even more than that there. But again, went about Glebehousen Estate playing football and that. And the young ones maybe don't know much about us here, but we grew up in the Troubles and that there. So every time you left the house, you didn't know if you were coming home again. And then obviously, growing up in the Loyalist Housing Estate, where Mum and Dad were quite into the sort of like Protestant culture and that there. We were on the band parades and that, and then it was massive in the Glebe and that there, bonfires and that, and then so really from a young age we were being groomed to be loyalists. And every month the UVF and UDA sold magazines within the estate and that there. One was a volunteer, one was a warrior. And then I started to read them and started getting infatuated with the sort of trouble side of thing. And then in March 1988, that's never my sort of life change forever, so it was. Some of the older ones in the congregation will remember this here, but in March 1988, there's two soldiers, Derek Woods and I think it's David Howes, driving through Andersontown, in Belfast, came across an IRA funeral and retreated from the car and really getting it bad and Kilt and Andersontown that day and that, but it was all over the news. And we were sat and watching it as it's, and I can still see them today, that the evil in the Republicans' eyes. It was an IRA funeral, you know, and the evil in their eyes and the damage they wanted to do. And then I started to read about it in the magazines and that, and then that was like, so instead of my heroes becoming football players, which they were in the sort of early to mid-80s, my heroes started to become loyalists, you know, people like Billy Wright, Lenny Murphy and that there. I started to read loyalist books then from young age, so read The Shankill Butchers at 11 years of age, which isn't really like sort of reading that a young one should be reading, quite graphic, but part of our history. And then Michael Stone's Stone Cold, read that at 13 years of age. So these people started to become who I wanted to be. And then started getting into drinking, drugs, running with my mates and that there. And then almost 10 years to the date, by them two soldiers being killed, joined UDA myself, so that just sort of like a downhill spiral then for about 12-13 years.
Okay, well, we're on that. So thank you for being so honest as well, Ian. So there's so many things in your life that I think that can probably a lot of this generation can resonate with, and maybe didn't make some of the decisions that you made, but we're on that path and had seen some of the things. And so you haven't always followed Jesus. You love Jesus today. So maybe take us on a bit of a journey of them 10 to 13 years of what it was like before you made a decision to follow Jesus.
So sort of around, I would say probably 13, whenever I went to high school, obviously puberty messed up the whole sort of weirdness on my brain. Started getting fights all the time at school, loved it. Absolutely loved fighting. So I want to profess to be a hard man, but I know my way around a fight, and I was blessed with a pretty decent right hand, which, whether it's a blessing or a curse, but so I just loved it. I just loved being violent myself and that. I just loved fighting, loved the drinking culture, loved the drug culture at that time. I just kept getting into trouble and that there. But I was a really talented footballer as well. Probably should have been across the water, but the day that the scouts came to watch me in the cricket park, I got sent off that day because of my temper. But it was just there's certain things that was going on with this voice in my head and that air, which we now they come to realise we think it might be ADHD. So, but back then it was never a thing, and talking was never a thing. You were just man up, get on with it, put your head down. I'm not trying to blow me in trumpet here, but I'm really, really smart, but I just couldn't vocalize it, couldn't put it on the paper, and that wore into frustration, which then wore into violence and fighting, and as I say, drinking and drugs and that there, and then just kept going on a downward spiral, ruined my football career, never got took to boxing and that there because it was at the chapel, obviously, so never got to really follow any of my passions in that there, so my passion then became the dark side, so to speak. So, and then right up until I was about 21, and this is where God actually did start to work, proper work, or I started to notice God working in my life, even though I didn't realise it back then. But when I was 21, I was working and that, and I put money away for a night out and that there. But the money got stole, which ended up being one of the brothers anyway. He took it to go out with his and play snooker and that there, but I just was really upset in that there. And that's what I say, didn't ask me, that you asked her, but for the first time ever, my mum sort of went, right, okay, I'll give you the money to go out, but it wasn't enough. She didn't have enough to give me to go where I was meant to go. So the brothers started seeing his ex-wife in that there, and they were at a party in Corian, and it turned out to be my soulmate in there, 18th. So it was the 1st of October, 2000, so it was, and met Melanie that night and clicked straight away. Moved really, really quick. Moved in with each other really quick. Just spent nearly every week a minute with each other and that there. And then 9 months later, long big bundle of joy arrived and that there, which should have been probably the happiest day of my life. And it actually was the happiest day of my life, but it actually caused a spiral that for the next 9 years, I put my family through proper the ringer, if you know what I mean. So I was working in the model care home and I'd done a 12-hour shift, and then we were so short-staffed, they'd asked me to stay on, and I stayed on and done our shift, so no sleep. Corey wasn't the best of sleepers as a kid in that air, so he just kept getting up in that air. And so I'd went to bed in that, and I thought I'd only be sleeping 5 minutes. So I says, said to Melanie, you got up, or you stay there, I'll get up. And in the bathroom, and just passed out, blacked out, fell back onto the bath, and sort of bent the way you shouldn't have bent. So instead of bending that way, I bent that way. Was mangled in among the bath. Melanie, how she summoned the strength was... I stopped breathing, she pulled me out, put me in recovery position, brought me around, and I didn't even remember any of what, but I just remember sort of coming out and her going, right, we had to get you to the hospital, and I was like, nope, we're just going back to bed and that there. And then, I think it was 3 days later, the impact of the fall hit me. I was walking somewhere, I can't remember where it was just past the spar, and the pain just seared right into my back, as if somebody had stabbed me in my machete right in the base of the spine. And I was in crippling pain. And I thought, it's just a spasm in that air, but it turns out it ended up as a really severe back injury, which I just kept damaging because I just kept playing football, kept working, kept doing whatever it was, just acting the leg a lot of times, but then I started to self-medicate with alcohol. So that's where it sort of started to go downhill. I knew my football career, I was playing at quite a high standard at the time. I was playing at intermediate, as you know, was quite a tough standard back then. I was playing at that sort of level in that era, but it was just getting ratty. It was just everything, just that much pain. And I just couldn't wait to get back to the bar just to get a drink, just to numb the pain in that era. Didn't want to go home because then I had the pain of, you know, Melanie was suffering from severe postnatal depression. Corey just wasn't the best sleeper. So just the actual stresses of the world were just like too much for me to, which I didn't know at the time, probably ADHD, just couldn't filter, couldn't process it. And I just started to drink really, really, really heavily. And then I was going out and wasn't coming home. I was maybe going away for 2-3 nights at a time. And I don't know how, but she stuck with me through it and out there. So I'm trying to brush her up for time's sake, or brush her a lot of things that happened for time's sake and that, but I was a horrible, horrible person. Probably the two people that I should have loved the most, you know, Melanie and Corey. But I can only apologise now, but I'm working every day now to like, sort of make up for that, if you know what I mean. So, but Melanie held the house together and stuck by me through thick and thin. But I was a horrible, horrible person. And then I was just violent, trying to do as much damage. I think I was actually trying to get sent to jail, to be honest with you. I think because I thought, if I go to jail, I'll get the help that I need without any ask for it. You know what I mean? So, 9 years of like sheer hell for them too. So it was. So.
Thank you so much, Ian, again. And what something I think comes across for me is that a lot of people in this sort of area of life can almost glamorize it and think it's something that is good, but your story is so raw, and you understand the failure that sometimes you chose to be, and some of the decisions that you made that weren't right. And so it's a really honest, humble way to look at it, and I think it's really kind that you can now look back at yourself and some of the decisions you've made, but also now reflect on it to choose, I want to do better. And I'm assuming that there's probably people in this space tonight who have made decisions that you regret, and maybe making decisions that you regret. And sometimes in their moments, and I'm sure you could say, Ian, you feel like there's no way out of it. Like here, I can't get out of this. I can't ask for help. I can't do anything. But your story, which we'll hear in a second, is that moment where someone helped you out of it. And so on that journey, Ian, when was the first sort of encounter with Jesus? How did you go from being this guy that you have described to someone who loves Jesus?
Well, as I say, as much as I didn't treat her that way, Melanie was my security blanket, so her sticking around really, it did help to a certain extent. But as I say, there It wasn't all bad, obviously, but there was some good teams as well. Three in among that, or very few, but there was. But then that actually happened in 2010. Every week I was like, I'm going out, but I'll be home and that there. And Melanie had heard it that many times and that there. So I was remembering Sunday, and I went to the big UDA Remembering Sunday parade up in Londonderry. And come home, and there was a big match on that afternoon. And I was like to Melanie, I was like, look, I'm going to go out, you know, for a couple of pints and out there with the lads and out there, and I'll be home for tea time and out there. I got a tea time, obviously, Ian never come home again. And then got to 7 o'clock, and I was like, should I go home now? And I was like, oh, do you know what? No, I'm going to stay out, I'm having a good time and out there. And then I actually got chatting to a fella down the street that night. It was actually a relation and that, and we got in a quite deep conversation. The next thing I knew, it was like 10 o'clock, and I was like, well, damage is done now, so I ended up staying out. And it wasn't even my worst, you know, I was back home, I think, about 12, half 12, maybe 21, so I hadn't stayed away the whole night, like I usually would have done, but I just went to bed, woke up the next morning, and just the atmosphere in the house was different. I just knew Melanie was done. You just get this feeling. And I was sitting up the stairs, you know, people get the walk of shame that there. Well, I was sitting in the set of shame sort of thing. And this was true, Bill. I was just sitting and I just heard God. And it's the loudest, scariest, most forthright voice I ever heard in my life. He just went, you need to stop now, or that's it, you're done. Obviously, I'm doing the mail, and I was like, sorry, I'll never do it again. I mean, this time, promise. And she was like, well, whatever. But somehow she still managed to stick her in that day and for the next week and that. And then the next weekend, I didn't drink. And then the next weekend after that, didn't drink again. Didn't even have the feelings that I wanted to drink. And then 3 weeks became a month became 3 months and that. And I just wasn't getting this feeling that I wanted to drink. And I was like, wow, this is new sort of thing. I didn't want to be violent for the first time in a long, long time. It just was calm, just repairing my relationship with Melanie and that. And then she started to learn to trust me again. And then, so for that day of 2010, I think it was the 15th of November, 16th of November, that was God's voice, just rattled my cage more or less. I'm not scared of many things in life, but that really put the fear in me, if you know what I mean. So.
And from that moment, so that was 2010, when did you give your life to Jesus? When was the moment you sort of bowed and say, Lord, I want you to take all of my life?
So anybody that knows me really well knows I'm a real stubborn, thrown sort of person. And I do apologise to anybody. I haven't got a telephone voice. I'm Ballymoney, Ulster, Scotch. And so if you didn't pick up everything, maybe pause it and life it up. But I was thrown, stubborn and that. I still wasn't like, I still had the ground and feel it. Young age, whenever we ran to 3P and that there, so still new bits and pieces in that there. But me and Melanie were obviously trying for another kid in that there, and then we were having trouble in that there. So I got tested. I was Maryland fine, as they say, so I was above the national average, some for my account, but Melanie was really low. So we went fertility treatment and that there, but it was a tablet called Clomid and that there, which wasn't really good for Melanie's mental health. Doesn't mind me saying this here, but it actually made her a wee bit spaced out, do dally, you know, sort of thing, because it was like that intense and that there. So as we said, look, we hate to come off that there. She still had two bouts that to take or something it was, and we just says, no, that's not worth it. So, but because we had Corey, we couldn't go for IVF on the NHS, and it was too expensive to go for it privately. So, we sort of kind of getting up hope in that air. But at the same time, I was sort of in chats with my dad a wee bit about biblical stuff in that air. He used to be very, very versed before strokes in that air. He was a real proper God-fearing man in that air. And we used to get into wee chats and discussions and that, but I was always trying to disprove him, trying to, like, pick holes in his argument and that there, but it was that well versed. He's too good for me at that time, so it was. And just started to say a couple of wee things that just started to like ache in there, but like, well, what happens, Melanie and Corey, if you didn't make the decision and things like that there? And then because I wasn't being selfish anymore, I started to actually think about that there. And then Melanie's mum had been diagnosed with dementia, and her granny had passed away and that there. So we were just going through the ringer at the time, trying to get pregnant and that. And it was just a tough time and that there. And I was working in Sega Healthcare in Ballymena at the time, but whenever my granny passed away, I got a wee Bible. that we began there in 1984, and I got that as sort of like part of the inheritance and that. Aaron started to take out of work with me, and instead of sitting with everybody at lunchtime, I went to the car, started to read the Bible, started to pray and that. And then that's saying to Melanie, it's funny that the two portions of scripture at that time that really stuck out to me and have been touched on a lot this week was John 1 and verse 5, which is still my favourite verse in the Bible. I like the King James version that the light shone the darkness, darkness could not comprehend it. And then Isaiah 53, he's wounded for our transgressions and bruised for our iniquity. And them were the two that really sort of stuck with me at that time. And then the discussions with my dad got more and more, and then I started to pray. And then I just said, you know what, I'm going to give this prayer thing a proper go. And I dropped to my knees one day in the kitchen, and I prayed, and I prayed for another child. And lo and behold, a few months later, we found that the wee miracle, because we were told we couldn't have anymore unless IVF was the only option. And then the wee miracle there was born in 2016. So, and then out of that, then Melanie's mum started to go downhill more and more and more, their dementia and that. And but so blessed that she got to meet, well, she knew Corey for all them years, and then she got to meet Finlay as well. But in 2018, she passed away in the January in 2018, and it was actually on her way to one of the days of her wake. Me and Melanie, the first time we'd even started to discuss it, we just sort of looked at each other at the same time. My mum and dad had always been badgering me about going to church with them, and we just sort of turned and looked at each other and said, why not try us Sunday? I went, right, okay, we'll try it Sunday. And then I think it was the next day or a couple of days later, Corey came to us and says, my friends have been badgering me at school. He says, they're telling me to go to church. And then something to go on this Sunday. So that's, well, okay, I'm going to go this Sunday. So we end up going to church. And then a few weeks later, I gave my life to the Lord. And then a few months later, Melanie and Corey. And then we all got baptized together as well, which was nice. And so God's hand has always been in our life. It's only new that we can sort of look back and say, you know, pick it, oh, well, it was big there, and not there, so it was brilliant. Like, so.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't it? It's amazing how God is just so, so good. For people in the room who maybe feel too far gone, or someone listening online and says, I hear that could never be me, what would you say?
It's a wee quote that I was given a good few years ago, and it stuck with me. I love it. It's like, if anybody, obviously suffers, a big thing, especially if anybody suffers from any sort of mental disorder and that there, and it's all about acceptance and that there, but just think how valuable you are when the devil pursues you at every opportunity, every minute, every day, but that the Lord of the universe would lay down his life for you.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. When you look back in your life then, Ian, there's so many things that you could look back upon. Where are the moments that you can just see the hand of God being so faithful upon? The moments of, you said you were in the darkness, or you heard sort of the voice in your head. Where's even the moments you can just see, here, God, you were always working?
How graphic can I go? there's a few. There's a few big ones. So I'll start with the graphic one, because then it gets better than that. So there's one night, a fellow pulled a machete on my brother, Tweed's Alley. A lot of people think this sort of stuff doesn't go on in Ballymoney, but it actually does. There's actually a dark side of Ballymoney a lot of people don't really know about. But this, down at Officer Corner, he was with his mate and that there, and this fellow pulled a machete, two brothers, and I'm threatened, because he didn't like me anyway, me and him had a couple of run-ins, you know, and then so he threatened the brother instead, because he couldn't get me. And so the brother came up and told us this here, and so we went and hunt for him. And we actually got them at the back of Vivo, if everyone knows where Vivo is in Ballymoney. But I caught the brother, not the one that I really wanted, but I caught the brother, so I started wheeling him a wee bit, you know. And then somebody shouts, we got him, which was the one that actually pulled the machete or the knife or whatever it was. So I ran up, and he was standing, and I creamed him, like, do you know what I mean? Just hit him, and he fell. And it just fell perfectly, sort of at the curb with his head. I had these big boots on and that, and I just started to, like, jump in his head. So, Dad, sorry for the graphics, but this is what it was. And just the thoughts in killing him. Much, I didn't care about the consequences. That's all I could think about at that time. And it was a certain person actually came around the corner in a car and grabbed me and put me in the car. And he says, he never would have drove that way ever in his life. I don't know why he drove that way that night. Well, we didn't know why he drove that way that night, but he drove in that corner and he says, you in the car. He says, before you kill that man. And that was the first real one that I know about. Then obviously How I Met Melanie, that was a major one. Finley and Corey, obviously two big blessings in her life. And then, I'm being honest here, my dad's face when he had his first stroke. That's how I knew God was real, because that man, you just seen it in his face, you know, just knew that day. There's probably been a wheel of ambulance and that there. I'm watching him in the hospital bed, I just knew God's hand was upon him. So you just, and then he's a testament sitting there, you know, it's three major strokes and a lot of mini strokes and that there. And he's still, although he's brain damaged, but he's still a blessing in our life and that there. And then, as I say, my security blanket there, like, she's the one that calms me. She's just the biggest blessing in my life, along with the kids and that there, mainly. So them's the major ones. So they were, and that's just, you just know, and whenever things like that happen to you in life, you can't really doubt it. So,
I think you said something when you said at the moment that you were sitting on the stairs, almost like the set of shame. It's the first time, the language you used was, it's the first time I heard God. It wasn't that he wasn't speaking, it was that you heard him. Yeah. And there's a song, I think it's called Waymaker, says, even when I don't feel it, you're working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Yeah. And the reality is that the Lord is always working. He's always at work in people's lives. It's just us who sometimes can't hear it and see it. But there's this.
Sometimes has to work a bit harder for me, but anyway, so.
Yeah. But it's now these moments, isn't it, that's beautiful, that you look back upon your life. And even though there's moments of regret and decisions that you would take back if you could, you still see the hand of God right throughout all of it. He's that kind and he's that gracious and he's that good. And here, sitting here today, last question, following Jesus isn't the easiest life in the world. Is there some things you still find difficult? But at the core of it, do you still think it's the greatest decision you've ever made in your life?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. But as I say, that we quote about the devil pursues you every day. And then because of the way I'm sort of wired and made up, my temper's not the greatest still at times, especially at work, and maybe if Graham's in, he'll be able to testify, but our place at the minute's a wee bit difficult sometimes to work, and then I never shirk for a fight, you know, never shirk for an argument and that there, so I'm the one that the boys look to sort of go in, but sometimes in that, I didn't maybe carry my soul in the best of way, but as I say, I knew there just wasn't the right wiring in my head at times, so I got speaking to a mate of mine who's actually a mental health nurse and that, and started to discuss ADHD and that. She says, I think you have it. You get diagnosed with it and that there. And I said, how long does it take? She says, 6 years. And I was like, do you know what? I'll just go pump the phone medicine. I'll just take your word that I probably hate it and that. And I have it. That's what I say. I call me only my elf now because I could be standing, and she's always turning off hobs around the house and that. So I didn't burn the house down and that. Or I could be standing cooking, then I'll be on watching football and she'll let the dinners on. And that, or, you know. But so she's my wee elf, but so just the way I'm wearing that there, sometimes I didn't hold myself right, but I was speaking to Joanne about this earlier on and a couple of yesterday, found magnesium, so anybody that's suffering for any sort of mental, like, voices or that there, magnesium just sort of levels you out and quietens them voices and that, and then so I've just been myself the last 3-4 weeks, and I've been pretty male now, hopefully testify for us, been a lot calmer, a lot. And even at work, I've been a lot calmer and that, so...
And you even said yes to this, so it must
you probably asked me at the right time, because you asked me about 7 weeks ago, probably would have said no, but anyway. But I know we're here, and I suppose we're through it now, so...
Nearly, yes. Here, one last thing. For people in the room who've never decided to follow Jesus, or maybe people in the room who did follow Jesus at a stage and maybe lost their way, or people listening online, what bit of advice would you give them?
Don't overcomplicate it. Don't overcomplicate. I think the church has, the modern church, sorry, has overcomplicated things and made it like this. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, where it's not like that. We're all broken. Jesus paid the price. So we didn't hate any all 8 days except them. And so didn't overcomplicate it, as I say. Just realize how special you are. And you didn't always have to seek approval for your friends. You know, the only one you need to seek approval for is the Lord. And so didn't let your friends influence your life to. Because it's a big, big, massive roundabout I had to go on to get to where I'm at now. So, you know what, you're doing that route. So, and you have a good teacher here and good youth set up here. So, any young ones, then they get involved in any garbage, just head down and batter on.
Brilliant. Give it up for Ian, guys. Thank you so much. Just... Brilliant. Here, that takes a lot of bravery and it takes a lot of honesty to share that. Please have some conversations with him after. I want to share really briefly for like 2 minutes. Our sort of theme tonight, I don't know if you could have guessed, is light that transforms. And Ian's life is this testimony that, and his language, not mine, that he lived a life that seemed to be in complete darkness, ruled by darkness, decisions made in darkness. And yet there was a moment, and it started with a voice on the stairs, and it ended in a decision that sort of was in a church service, that here he decided to follow Jesus. And in that moment, everything changed for him. Light transformed his entire life. And I don't know where you are tonight on this journey or listening online. I don't know what your story is or where you've been. But when I was thinking of what do I say briefly as we come to a bit of a close, I thought, who do I share around? And the person in the Bible that I see really clearly that Ian's life looks a wee bit like is Paul. And if you're unfamiliar with Paul, let me tell you a bit of his story. This guy was known as Saul and then got a better name, Paul. And in chapter 7 of Acts, we're introduced to this guy called Paul. And this guy was not this small, like, member of society. He was quite an impressive member of society. He was quite a high-ranking person within sort of the Roman government. He was someone that people would have knew. He was someone that people would have feared. He was that sort of a figure. And when we read in Acts chapter 8, verse 3, Saul was ravaging the church, entering house after house, dragging off men and women. He was desperate for the destruction of Christianity. He was just like almost hell-bent in making sure that Christianity didn't spread. And in Acts, we see of this guy, Stephen, who is the first martyr of the church, and he gives this incredible speech, and he gets killed for his faith. And it says in Acts chapter 8, verse 1, Saul approved of the execution. He held the coach for the guys to throw the stones. This is not this sort of guy who would have been friendly to approach if you were a Christian. This is someone that would have brought complete terror and fear. See, this guy wasn't scrolling for sermons. He wasn't looking for different ways to follow Jesus. His full-time job was the persecution of Christians. You think, where's the hope? And I'm sure Ian probably in moments of his life thought, where's the hope? Where'd I go from here? And then there's this amazing moment that the light breaks the darkness, that light transformed Saul's life. Everything changes in Acts chapter 9, a couple of chapters after we meet him. And it says this in verses 3 to 5. Suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, who are you, Lord? You see, this was the moment that light defeated the darkness, that Jesus met Saul on this road to Damascus. He was sort of going to try and persecute more Christians in the faith in Damascus, and the Lord meets him in this moment, and he transforms everything. Saul goes blind for a period of time. A man called Ananias comes and prays for him, and scales fall off his eyes, and he sees. And God says this is my chosen instrument for the Gentiles. So Paul, this guy who was persecuting Christians, killing Christians, someone who did not like this faith at all, Jesus meets him in a moment, light breaks through, and he now becomes the instrument that God uses to bring light to the world. You see, God takes a man that destroyed Christians and turns him to the man that writes 2/3 of the New Testament. Like, only God does like plot twists. Like, that's unbelievable. And I have 2 small brief points tonight, so you can bear with me. I'm nearly there. First one is this. If you're wondering, and Ian said this really wisely tonight, and I asked, what's your advice for people who don't follow Jesus? And he said, don't overcomplicate it. My first point is this. You don't change first. You don't change first. Quite often we feel like if you don't follow Jesus, you have to come basically dressed up. You almost have to get yourself right before the Lord would accept you. You almost have to say the right language. You have to do the right things. You have to look the right way before the Lord would sort of accept you. That is not true. Paul's on his way to kill people. He's on his way to persecute people. And it's in that moment, in his pursuit of persecuting Christians, that God meets him, and then change happens. And so if you're in here tonight and you're thinking, here, I could never become a Christian tonight, because here I would need to do way more work than where I am right now. I would have to make a lot of decisions before I would make this decision to follow Jesus. I would have to change too much. You are not right. You come as you are. It says this in Romans 5:8. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Not after you improved, not after you said the right language, while you were still sinners, Christ died. I know for my life, I wasn't as old as Ian when I gave my life to Jesus. I was 14. And I know I made decisions that I regret, and I still do. But the reality is this, I didn't get cleaned up to come to him. I met him, and he changed me, and he molded me into the person that I am today. See, Ian is not the person that he was when he was 21. Ian is who he is today because the Lord has changed him and worked on him and molded him into being his son. You see, this light that you need, you don't get changed before you come. When you receive the light, he changes you. And my last point quickly is this. In no way of beating around the bush, this is my last point. You really need this light. Like, you really need it. See, without God's light, I don't know where Ian would be today. Without God's light, I don't know where I would be today. Without God's light, I don't know where followers of Jesus in this room would be today. Without God's light, I don't know what narrative Paul would have had. We need the light of the Lord. John 8:12 says this, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me, not just a group of people, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Ian made a decision that he will follow Jesus, and he no longer walks in darkness. And the reality is that some of us in this room tonight or online can make decisions that we have been walking in darkness for far too long. We have been allowing the enemy to win for far too long, but tonight might be the night where you say, I want to walk in the light. You see, light isn't optional. It is essential for our lives. If we want to get right with a holy God who loves you so much, who loves you more than you would ever fathom, if you want to get right with him, then this light is essential. That is Ian's story. That is my story. That is Christians in this room's story. That is Paul's story. You see, the light of Jesus doesn't just satisfy you for a moment. It doesn't just scratch an itch. It doesn't just satisfy an urge. The light of Jesus satisfies you for eternity. It's all you need. It's all you will ever need. And maybe tonight you feel like your story's already written. Maybe tonight you feel like you've made too many mistakes and you're too far gone. Maybe you think you've messed up or drifted too far. But the same light that stopped Paul on the road to Damascus, I think, is here tonight. I think the same light that met Ian on his stairs, I think, is here tonight. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says this, and this is Ian when he gave his life to Jesus. If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come. See, Jesus doesn't just want to like improve you. He doesn't just want to do something for you. He wants to recreate you. He wants to redefine all of your mistakes. He wants to take you from where you were, and he wants to place you somewhere where you could only have ever dreamed to be. You see, if you let the light in, he will change everything. You see, he will give you a purpose and an identity. You see, the light of Jesus transforms everything it touches. And I believe he wants to transform some lives in this space and online tonight. Lord, I thank you for tonight. I thank you for testimonies like Ian's. Someone who tried to do it himself and failed, but seen you, Lord, and you changed everything. God, I thank you that your love and your mercy is free for us because of what you have done. And I pray, Lord Jesus, for this church. I pray for every person who put their hand up. I pray for every person who thought about putting their hand up but didn't. God, I pray that you would just continue to work in their lives. God, I thank you that you chose us before we chose you. I thank you that you loved us before we loved you. And I pray, Lord Jesus, would you captivate us afresh with your love? God, we thank you that this life is not about our own, but it's all about you. Would we all collectively live lives, Lord, that would bring glory to your name? We love you, Lord, and we pray that you would be with us as we continue in worship and as we enjoy some fellowship after. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. If you would like any more information, have a look at our website at www.ballymoneyelam.com.